Hi, everybody. I'm Michael. I'm an alcoholic. We're coming here from the Akron Intergroup office. And I would like to say, first of all, that I am more than honored to be a part of this. I have a group of folks at my home right now. We're having a big Founders Day barbecue, and I had some technical difficulties, so I got to come down to the office. So I'm very grateful for that. I'm thankful to the Founders Day committee. I know that Jeff and Aaron and Paul and Peter, and there's a few others that really, really worked hard to be able to put this together this year because Founders Day was canceled, and they were able to make this happen on Zoom, which is a big deal. And just by the number that I'm seeing of the participation is what a blessing to us. So I talked to Val, and thank you guys for asking me. And so I'm going to give you, me and Valerie are going to go back and forth, and we're going to discuss the traditions, and hopefully we can share some authentic and honest, real experiences and make them common so that we all understand them to some degree. So I've been asked to do a little bit of an introduction as far as the history of the traditions, and just because of the time concern, I'm going to just keep that brief as possible. So Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps were working, people were sobering up, and it was working. And the biggest concern that Bill, our founders, had was how are we going to stay working together? And the concern was that we would, if we were destroyed, it would be from the inside out. So early AA, there was all kinds of membership requirements. There was, if you were a woman, you couldn't be a part of a meeting. If you were a loose woman, you couldn't be a part of a meeting. If you had money, you couldn't be a part of some groups. And there was all these different things going on. And Bill and Bob, they got letters and letters and letters. And someone, I'm not sure who it is, and forgive me for that, they wrote a letter to the Grapevine, and it discussed the Washingtonians and their success and ultimately their failure. And as a result of that, Bill looked into some of those principles, and out of that came the 12 traditions. So all of us are affected by, we're all alcoholic. And as a result of alcoholism, we have been in broken relationships. We have been, we've hurt people. We're no stranger to betrayal. We're no stranger to dishonesty. And as a result of that, we kind of shield up. So when we get sober and it's the greatest thing going, now we're to interact in these groups, but we got all these different guards up, and our personal relationships are just, we just don't really know how to do it. So how do we function effectively as a group? What keeps us small? What keeps the playing field level? So there's no big I's and little U's, and how do we keep this thing going? And that's what the traditions are all about. And the traditions were adopted in the first World Conference in Cleveland. And at first, there was a very difficult time. The AAs didn't accept the traditions at first. It was very difficult to get them through, to get people to accept them. And but they have been accepted, and they are practiced. And I think that the traditions are extremely valuable. They're essential and absolute as far as our groups and our committees. And I think they're also absolute in our individual lives and our work and with our families and so forth and so on. So I don't want to go too much more into that, except for without the traditions, we probably would not still be here today. And if we were, we'd be some form of something else. But because of the traditions, we are able to do things like that. So I want to introduce Valerie. Valerie is a... she lives a few states away, but I've met her a few times and I've heard her talk, and I really respect her. I think she's one of the most authentic speakers that I've ever heard, for sure. And because of that, I truly look up to her and respect her. So she's going to start, and she's going to introduce tradition one, and then her and I are just going to bounce back and forth from there.
Thank you. Hey, Mike, thank you so much. Good to see you. Glad you made it down to the office.
Yeah,
and I want to thank the committee as well. It's a huge honor to be asked to be a part of this and to participate. So thank you. And thank you, Mike. I appreciate you asking. So tradition one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. That's the short form. And then we have our long form. Each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. AA must continue to live, or most of us will surely die. Hence, our common welfare comes first, but individual welfare follows close afterward. So for me, my experience with the traditions, when I first came into AA this time around, I was one of those people that would irritate people who actually had some experience with the traditions and understood their importance and understood their value. I was kind of like, oh, anything goes, don't worry about it. And when traditions were read in meetings, I just kind of tuned out. I didn't pay attention to them. I didn't understand their significance. I didn't understand how important they are to our fellowship and to our unity. And they, just like the steps and like the speaker previous was talking about, you know, they're contrary to my all natural alcoholic personality, which is I don't want to follow any kind of suggestion that involves integrity or humility. I mean, I may be able to dress that up, but the reality of who I was inside was somebody who was absolutely a power driver. I was absolutely somebody who wanted their own way, who wanted to dictate how AA should operate, and it was from a very naive, inexperienced point of view. Today, however, I understand the power of the traditions and how they hold us together as groups and as individuals participating in a group, and where I really started to understand and get some experience with them and see their value is in my home group. It was really important for me with my sponsor. One of the requirements that she had for me after, you know, running around AA like a lunatic was that one of the requirements she had was, hey, you're going to have to get a home group that's actually active in Alcoholics Anonymous, that has regular business meetings, that participates at the group and state and national level, that is a part of all of that, that's part of the group conscience, and be a part of the whole. You know, I had to drink the AA Kool-Aid. I had to take it all in and give myself over completely, like has already been talked about. One of the best definitions for me of unity that I found, and I wish I could tell you where I read this at. All I know is I wrote it down, but it said, unity is that through whose power everything that exists is called one. And for me, that definition of unity really hit me, because we do have to come together as a whole. If we're not operating in a unified manner, then AA won't survive. The individual on their own won't survive. We need each other. So we have to find a way to be together. And like Michael was talking about, I mean, we come in here to AA, various level of insanity and sickness. And, you know, we have to learn how to, you know, we're all a bunch of anarchists too, or I'll speak for me. I was total, I don't want to follow any kind of rule. I don't want to be told what to do. And, you know, the traditions start to tell me, hey, you don't have to do this stuff, but it's really important for the health of your group, for the health of AA, and for the health of your relationships. And it's part of your growth on this path. Because I don't, you know, like the 12 and 12 talks about, I don't know how to have relationships. They're defective. So this is part of what we do. This is part of our three legacies, and it's vital. And I'm going to pass it back to Mike.
Thanks, Val. I'd just like to piggyback off of some of the things you said, that I agree that the traditions are all, I think they can be summed up in one word, and that's unity. And I do have a little, in 1941, Grapevine, Bill Wilson wrote, our next undertaking is the problem of living and working together. And for various reasons, like Val said, we're maniacs, we're alcoholics, we're selfish. And I don't think that without the program, we're capable. I mean, we might think we are at times. I don't think that we're capable of being concerned with anybody else. And the importance of the traditions is, I have a daughter, and she just graduated high school. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I got custody of my daughter when she was about 6 years old. And she's been through a lot of stuff, and it doesn't make her an alcoholic, and so far, so good. But God, if you know, I tried everything to get sober. I mean, you name it. I tried. I got baptized about 6 or 7 times. I did a lot of different things. And the last house on the left for me was Alcoholics Anonymous. And boy, if I would have came here first, it worked. And I want Alcoholics Anonymous to be in its same power with the same unity. I want it to still be here for my little girl. I need it to be here just in case. And I think that we need to, the tradition is that we need to stick together or we're going to die off. We have to stick together. Our common welfare is so much more important. AA's reputation is way more important than mine. It's just way more important. And all the rest of the traditions are going to support this tradition as we go. They're just going to kind of roll into each other. So, Val, you got anything else on tradition one?
No.
All right, I'm going to go into tradition two. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Now, this is odd because that was the long form. And here is the short form, which is actually longer than the long form. Only in AA can we have something like that. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. What I've learned about tradition two in a group, so as in a home group or a committee, is that there's a vibe or there's a feeling with every group. And if there's a, because I've been, you know, I speak for myself. I've been a dictator and I've been arrogant and I thought I'd known better and all these things. And what happened as a result of that was I robbed the group of the group conscience. I forced my way. And I've done a lot of other things too. So I've learned, just like Alcoholics Anonymous learned about these traditions, is by mistake, by trial and error. But what I think is very important is part of that tradition, in order for a group to have a good group conscious, a group good God conscious, is to be well informed. And I think sometimes that we're not well informed. And I think that with the more information that I have about a particular idea, whether it's coffee or smoking at the meeting or how much money to spend on the corrections committee or whatever it may be, without enough information, I'm robbed of the opportunity to make a decent decision. I'm robbed of the intuition. If I only have half of the information about something, I'm handicapped to be able to make a good decision. And it's also important that when I'm in a home group or in a committee setting, that I hear these minority voices, and I hear, because I've seen decisions in groups and committees where the minority voice was heard and the whole feel of the whole meeting has changed. And that is vitally important that everybody, and you know, the tradition, the saying is that we are a small part of a great whole. And that's really an honor for all of us, that we all have a voice in what happens and what goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous. And to be able to vote, to participate in these different things, then we need to know. Recently here, we had a council meeting and a decision that was made in general services came down the pipe. And it came down probably, I'd say, 3 months late. And because of that, our council was not able to go to the groups and is not able to go to the groups to be able to have a good group conscience decision about some of these things that are going on in Alcoholics Anonymous. And most of you know that Alcoholics Anonymous is an upside down triangle, that the individuals are the boss of AA, if you will. So without having the willingness, and because there's a lot of people that, I mean, if you go to meetings, there's people that you just don't get along with. They have different beliefs on you. There's people who are extremely right-wing, by the book, and there's some people who are extremely liberal and do whatever you want. And somewhere in the and that's a good thing, because in the middle of that, somewhere is a good group God conscience. And we need to be able to, I need to be willing just to listen to some of the people who I disagree with normally, because in that collective discussion, in that collective thing, there's somewhere in that's a very spiritual principle, and that's his God conscience as he may speak through our group conscience. So I think that's it. I pass with that. Val?
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, my experience with tradition too, my home group here in Richmond, I founded that group with a couple other people, and I really became like the leader in that group, and which was fine. That was needed for what we were trying to do and what we were trying to create. However, I got into a position of just becoming a power driver, and I had a very specific vision of this is what this group is about, this is what this group does, this is what we believe, this is how we do it, this is how we carry the message, and those are all fine and they're great. However, in getting something off the ground, but once it's off the ground, you know, it has to go to the group conscience. I remember many a heated business meeting where I was just getting personally offended that people were disagreeing with me, and that they needed to get on the right side of what I believed we needed to do. And, you know, and just being very, very arrogant and very much a power driver. This is the way it is, and this is the way it's going to be. And I was wrong. Although I could not see that at the time, I was still in the mindset of, you know, these people are going to just kill this meeting, or these people are just going to kill AA, or, you know, any of those grandiose thoughts. And what I thought was hysterical and helped, you know, helped me step down from the pulpit that I had gotten on was my home group voted me the cigarette butt picker-upper. And I was like, what? You can't make me the cigarette butt picker-upper. I'm one of the founders of this group. You know, I need an important job. And just that kind of mentality, and that just took me right back where I needed to be, that we're all just trusted servants. It is about the group. It is about the group conscience. And, you know, like Michael was talking about, it's imperative that we have an informed group conscience. And I have seen that too in my home group. And I, you know, when my home group takes inventory, one of the things that we always ask ourselves is, you know, do we create the environment where everybody has an opportunity to speak, where everybody has an opportunity to say what they need to say, even the people that are quieter, that aren't as, their personalities aren't as loud, because it's easy for people like me, that are just loud and, you know, have no problem expressing what we think, right or wrong, and for those people to be drowned out, or creating an environment where they're terrified to say anything. And that's not what AA is about. That's not who we are. That's not what we do. And I think that this tradition talks to that, and that's what it's taught me, is that everybody deserves to be heard. And like Mike, I've seen it many times in AA with a minority opinion speaking up and it changing the entire course of the business that was being voted on. And again, that's important if we're trying to create unity, if we're trying to bring people together. I've got to be open-minded to that I am not always right and I don't always know everything, which, you know, a lot of times I think I do. So I think you want me to hop on to three, or do you have anything else you want to say about that?
Yeah, I'd like to just, I'm looking at the clock. I think I can, I've done the same exact thing. I've started a group, and I just wanted to piggyback on that a little bit, because I've done this exact same thing and I've seen the results of it. I hurt the group by being domineering and thinking that this was my group, you know, and just going backwards through the traditions, and wasn't first my personal, that's what I put first. And as a result of that, the group, myself got sick, the group got sick, and people got hurt, and the group didn't do very well either. It wasn't this big attraction group that's doing real well. It got very sick as a result of that. And I think it's important also for us as Alcoholics Anonymous to teach to, in our sponsorship or to those about us, to show them or introduce them to these traditions, because, you know, this is one step being well informed, at least to, you know what the traditions say, why are we operating this way, and what does our literature say. And I think it's important that we continue to carry that message so that we can have good group consciousness. All right, I'll pass.
Thanks, Mike. So three, our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. Hence, we may refuse none who wish to recover. Nor ought AA membership ever depend upon money or conformity. Any two or three alcoholics gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided that as a group, they have no other affiliation. and Tradition 3 short form. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. You know, this is one that always gets a lot of airplay and people have a lot of different opinions, but I think our literature is pretty clear about that, and it's based on experience. You're an alcoholic when you say you are. If you're an alcoholic and something else, that's great, you know, get in line. But when you're in an AA meeting, we are alcoholics. One story that I'll, you know, in my home group, we are alcoholics. We come together. That is our primary purpose, is to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think it's imperative, if you're going to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, you be an alcoholic. One of my experiences is I was called out on a 12-step call one time, and it was to a woman who her addiction was not alcohol. She was strictly a heroin addict. That was it. And no, she wasn't an alcoholic too. She was just a heroin addict. And, you know, I was just full of, you know, these steps can save everybody and I can help her and all that other stuff. And I remember going to her apartment and just sitting down and talking to her and trying to help her. And I called my sponsor while I was there. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what to say. We're not having that connection. I don't know what to do. And I'm afraid she's going to die. And he goes, what are you doing there? You can't help her. Get out of there and get her to the people that can. And I had no experience with that, and not that there aren't people in AA who do have that experience. They do, but me personally, I have no experience with that drug, and could not help her. But it taught me a really important lesson, which is, you know, we carry the message. There's one thing that I'm uniquely useful, and I have a primary purpose, and is to carry the message to the still suffering alcoholic. Now, am I a lot of other things? Sure. I'm crazy and a thief and a liar and all of those other things that I could recover from, or announce, you know, I'm an alcoholic and a thief and a liar and all that other stuff. But the point is that I'm an alcoholic. So if I'm an alcoholic, I can have full membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. My home group has an open meeting that is open to everybody. And we have no qualms about that. We also have a closed meeting that we're very protective of, that we ask that just alcoholics come and participate. And we don't argue about that. We don't fight about that. If somebody comes to our meeting that is not an alcoholic, you know, when they hear our reading at the beginning, some people have gotten up and gone, and some people have stayed, and we haven't said, "Hey, you got to." You're out of here. It was, you know, we talked to them after the meeting and try to talk to them and share our experience in an open-handed manner. I have been one of those people and harmed the group as a result, just, and it's a long story in itself, but of not following Tradition 3 and being very, rigid in my belief and approach with other people that were showing with other problems showing up at the meeting. And it's a disaster. And, you know, they're in just a hopeless position as I am. Mm-hmm. And, you know, let me help them get where they need to go. Let me help them find out if they're an alcoholic of my type, of our type, of, you know, the our literature describes. And I feel that that's my responsibility as an AA member, is to help people take a look at that and not summarily dismiss somebody from a meeting. But it's important, you know, like Mike was talking about the Washingtonians and so forth. It's we don't get into other stuff. We're just drunks here. We don't get involved in other things. We do this and we do this well. What other people are in addition to is really none of our business, and in my opinion, doesn't belong in an AA meeting. So I'm going to pass it over to you, Mike.
Thank you, Val. I think in my experience in the meetings I've been to, that the third tradition probably is the most debated, opinionated, controversial, if it's not really controversial, but it is a tradition that we have. And I believe in literature, like Val said, we look to our literature. That tradition was created because you can be an AA member if you say you are an AA member. It's just pretty much that simple. We're not excluding anyone. You're an alcoholic and you're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous if you say you are. So what I've seen happen is, as that tradition was formed to be inclusive, to not exclude people and different genders and different nationalities and different types and rich and poor, that tradition was created to unify us to some degree. And 85 years later, what you see more often, probably not, when the third tradition comes up, is somebody mentions drugs at a meeting, or someone goes to the podium and has a drug talk or whatever, and or someone just says, my name is so-and-so and I'm an addict, new usually. And what I've seen is two things happen. One is somebody just goes off on them. Somebody just flips the damn script on them and just, you know, reels in on them and telling them don't belong here and so forth and so on. And I don't mean to be judgmental towards that person, because I think they mean well. I'm not exactly sure, but I think they probably mean well. They're trying to protect the program and the primary purpose. And then the other thing that happens is the exact opposite. Nobody says nothing. So you got these two broad spectrums. You got the zealot who's protecting the primary purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous because no one else will. And then you have a whole, usually the majority of the people not saying anything. And I think, and I feel in my experience, that they're both equally as wrong. I really believe that both of those approaches are completely wrong. What I found in my experience and what I was taught was, when someone does that, that we're to go and talk to them. And by the time that you get to them and they've mentioned that there's something else or whatever else, they're already probably, somebody's yelled at them or said something to them or made them feel uncomfortable, and they're very rigid. So I've learned to be very, to tiptoe into that deal, to be very gentle and sensitive to that person, and to ask them about why they said that they introduced themselves as an addict at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And then another question that's huge in that deal is, do you know what an alcoholic is? Because if they're anything like me, I came to AA for a long 10 years and said, my name is Michael and I'm an alcoholic, and I had no idea what that was or what it meant. I had these, these under a bridge, went to jail or whatever, and that's what made me an alcoholic, and that really didn't have anything to do with anything. And as a result of taking that time, and I think we're all responsible to be able to do this. All of us as members of Alcoholics Anonymous have this responsibility to go have that conversation gently, to ask the questions, to be able to see if we can help someone to identify. Because without identification in Alcoholics Anonymous, that's a big deal. And what I found that 9 times out of 10 is the person who said, they come into the room, they say they're something else, and then you ask them what an alcoholic is, they don't usually know. Or they'll give you an answer, but you're able to say, well, I thought that too. That's not actually, there's what an alcoholic, and you can show them our literature. You can talk about our mental obsession, our physical allergy. These things, when somebody understands that, then they're grateful that someone took the time to explain it to them, because it very rarely happens. So then they understand the importance of it. I sponsored some young guys a few years ago. They were real young, and they were just, good do-gooder syndrome. You know what I mean? And they would, we all have that when we come in to some degree. But once they learn about the primary purpose and why we have this and we're able to do that, their fire got bigger. They exploded more in love with Alcoholics Anonymous, and they were able to help a ton of people. And to hear them young fellas talk about this and talk about the tradition and help people to identify as alcoholics is huge. So this third tradition is meant to be inclusive. It's not to kick anybody out. No, I'm sure there's times when people are disruptive, and there's some different scenarios by all means. But from what I've seen in my experiences, that's the minority of situations. The majority of situations is someone's bringing up drugs, or a committee's trying to do something they got no business doing, and so forth and so on. And I found that to honor that and is to just have a simple talk with people. And when they understand what an alcoholic is, if they're anything like me, I got a large amount of freedom just by understanding and identifying as an alcoholic. I pass with that.
Yeah, I'm going to say one more thing. I had one other thing that this tradition applied to. You know, sometimes, which I think is ridiculous, alcoholics judging other alcoholics, but we do it, unfortunately, because we're the last people in the world that should be judging anybody. But there was this gal who was coming to my home group, and she was really divisive, and she argued with everybody, and she was angry, and she was mean, and she would say really mean things and to everybody. And I remember calling my sponsor going, I just want to, you know, kick her out of here. I mean, is there a way that I can just ask her to leave? And she wasn't disrupting the meeting when the meeting was going on. She was just really unkind to people, before the meeting, after the meeting, during the break, and all that other stuff. And my sponsor said to me, he goes, well, Val, you know, sometimes the people who need your love the most deserve it the least. And it just reminded me that this is about us all coming together, and I can't make judgments on who deserves to be here, who doesn't deserve to be here. Making judgments on people where they come from or anything else. And anyway, I just wanted to share that quick story. Back to you, Mike.
All righty. I've done the same thing. I did the same thing. All right, tradition 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. And that's the short form. And here's the long form, where it really is the long form. With respect to its own affairs, each AA group should be responsible to no other authority than its own conscience. But when its plans concern the welfare of neighboring groups also, those groups ought to be consulted. And no group, regional committee, or individual should ever take any action that might greatly affect AA as a whole without conferring with the trustees of the General Service Board or such issues. Our common welfare is paramount. So there you hear that again. And it's really cool how the traditions just flow into each other. And they all support each other, which is really cool. And so my experience with this is that we have a meeting. In our area, there's more than one, I'm sure, and I'm sure that you guys probably have the same experience as that. There's more than one meeting at the same place. And on Saturday night, there's a pretty big meeting, but on Tuesday night, it's a pretty small meeting. And the smokers would flick their cigarette butts, and this is just a very small example, they would flick their cigarette butts all over the church parking lot and all over the porch. And I'm sure the group didn't want to do that, but nevertheless, it happened. So they would do that on Saturday night. There'd be cigarette butts all over the place. And then Tuesday we meet and there'd be cigarette butts all over the place, or the church picked up the cigarette butts. So when we would come into the meeting on Tuesday, we would get in trouble for cigarette butts. But it didn't have nothing. We weren't the ones. Our group was too small to have that many cigarette butts. So what happened was, even though that's a small example, that is exactly what this tradition is talking about. That group affected our group. It really did. Now, we've had workshops and conferences and so forth and so on at this particular building. And the same thing would apply if you're having a conference or something in the area where there's thousands of people coming along and you're staying at the hotel and you trash the hotel or something like that. Then next time another conference or an Alcoholics Anonymous venue of sorts comes to that, the hotel is going to be like, it doesn't matter what conference it was. You guys were AA. We don't want you here. You guys messed up the place. So we have a responsibility to each other. We really do to leave it better than when we got there. We really do. We have been given a gift that, you know, that is just amazing, and that we all are very grateful for. And gratitude is an action. And I think, and in my experience, is that yes, we ought to confer, to conversate with, and then all the other times, them two groups met when we did our conferences, and that group met Saturday. We would reach out to that home group and ask them, you know, hey, can we set the meeting up before you after our conference, because we know that you guys are meeting after our conference. Can we work together here? And that worked out very well. Now, the issues, I mean, it's a lot more than cigarette butts. And there's a lot of meetings that are meeting in the same church. And in a bigger spectrum of things, when it's important for us, you know, just supporting all the traditions that we just talked about, was that we need to be thoughtful of the rest of groups, and we need to be thoughtful of AA as a whole, and remember that our common welfare comes first. When I think about, hey, our common welfare comes first, if I just am able to think that sentence, it makes me extremely thoughtful for everybody else. Because without that idea or without that tradition, then I'm just, you know, it's whatever Mike says and Mike thinks he knows best and so forth and so on. So I'm going to turn over to Val with that.
That was great. I really like what the 12 and 12 has to say, that each group, AA group, is an individual entity strictly relying on its own conscience as a guide to action. And every group has the right to be wrong. And I love to, you know, he tells the story about the guy down south who was starting that hospital, and where our Rule 62 came from, you know, don't take yourself so seriously. My sponsor used to say to me all the time, they're like, Valerie, you know, lighten up. It's only a matter of life or death. You know, lighten up. Because I would take things so seriously. I was so rigid and would get so wrapped around the axle in trying to control other AA members and control my home group. What's wonderful about this is that we can be wrong, and it's okay to be wrong, that we are going to make mistakes. That was something that was really difficult for me to accept and to learn, because my ego is just so out of control. I don't want to be seen making a mistake. I don't want to admit I made a mistake, and I don't want to look bad. And what this is talking about is that the group has the right to be wrong, that the group can vote one way and then down the road say, maybe that wasn't the best idea. We thought it was a great idea, but maybe it wasn't the best idea. And being able and free to have enough humility as a group to say, we were wrong. We thought this would work. And I've seen that in my own home group when we've tried to change a format or try to do something different with different home group business, and it didn't work. And that's, you know, the great thing too, when you're a member of a home group for a long time, that's been my home group for over 20 years now, is I've been able to watch that group go through all kinds of different changes and personalities, and see us make mistakes and then change it, and, you know, people getting heated, people being, you know, enthusiastic. I mean, the whole gamut. It's such a wonderful experience to be a part of and to learn. But that's the main thing that this means to me, is that it's okay if you make a mistake. You know, try not to make decisions that's going to harm AA. Try not to make decisions that are going to harm other groups. You know, from the cigarette butts, am I being conscientious, to, you know, my neighboring groups, the AA groups that meet down the road. You know, when we started our Tuesday meeting, we tried to do that at a time when there weren't other meetings going on, so we could fulfill a need within our AA community. Just trying to think of others before we make big decisions or we make big changes to our formats or what have you. So, yeah, anything else?
I learned something from you a long time ago, Val. I heard you say, have an experience. And I have learned what that means. And I just to be the mistakes that we make and the errors, just piggybacking off what you said, are vitally important for our growth and our process. We learn. Most of us don't learn. We learn by busting our heads and by making big mistakes. And then I heard a quote, and it said, and just you reminded me of this, is your right to be wrong is more important than my right to be right.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Yeah, thanks. I love that too.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mike. All right, tradition five, the long form. Each Alcoholics Anonymous group ought to be a spiritual entity having but one primary purpose, that of carrying its message to the alcoholic still sufferers. And then short form, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. So, and I love it, you know, he says, around it, our society gathers in unity, and that's what we do. We love drunks. We want to go help these drunks, and the only thing that matters is that he's an alcoholic who has found the key to sobriety, and we can't keep this gift of sobriety unless we're willing to give it away. And you know, again, when my group does inventory, that's one of the big questions we ask, you know, what is this group's primary purpose and are we fulfilling that? And at different times, this, my home group has done a great job of that. And at other times, we've been complete slackers. We've really had the experience of, and sometimes we're right in the middle. But service has always been, service to the still suffering alcoholic and sponsorship and carrying the message into institutions has been at the core of my home group. It's really, we believe strongly in sponsorship. We believe strongly in carrying the message to the still suffering alcoholic, the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And for us, my home group's pretty big book based. We're really strong believers in carrying in that message. So that's what we do. But, you know, as a group, do we do this together? And in our meeting, is our meeting talking about recovery? Is our, for us, when we were looking at that was, you know, is our format centered around recovery? And recovery from alcoholism and our solution, what we do. It's so easy just to sit around and talk about the problem. And we wanted to make sure that, yeah, we need to talk about the problem because we got to talk about identification before we can say, hey, and then there, and then here's the solution. And it seems to be working for them and they've gotten better, you know, emotionally, mentally, physically, spiritually. So it's really important that we're talking about what we do and the solution, that we're not just staying stuck in the problem. And I'll turn it over to you, Mike.
Thank you, Val. Primary purpose. I believe in my experience in with different organizations and clubs and studies that I've been involved with is that what keeps Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the most important things is that we have a primary purpose. We focus on one thing, and our literature says, what is the enemy? Good is the enemy of the best, and we can be good at a whole bunch of different stuff, but we can be the best at one thing, and I believe that that is really what holds us together more than anything. If I've been in some different committee meetings and home group meetings and all these, you know, where it gets extremely tough. And the animosity is high and we're voting on money or where should we have the picnic or whatever is going on in alcoholics. How much money should we spend on literature? It gets hot and because everybody has to say so, which is really cool. But I found that if I ask myself, what does this have to do with carrying the message? It settles me down and my eye, because usually I get overexcited and I think I know right and so forth and so on. But if I ask myself, what does this have to do with carrying the message? It brings me back down and focuses me. I heard some people that I really look up to, and they were at a general services meeting, and they were saying, what is service? And they said the answer to that was, well, anything that has to do with carrying the message. And they took the question a little deeper than, what is the message? And unfortunately, there are different opinions about what the message is. And I think that that would probably be the more of a difficult narrative, if you will, to work through with other people. Because not all of us, unfortunately, I mean, if we look at our literature, the literature is the same, and we can find commonalities between people. There is a fellowship of the Spirit among us, no matter all of us. But some of us disagree on what the message is, unfortunately. So as a result of that, it kind of disrupts the whole deal there. So I think it's important that we all, that we use our literature, that we use our big book, that we look to our language of the heart and our 12 and 12 and all these different places so that we can have an idea or we believe in what carrying the message is. I'm going to pass with that.
Oh, you're supposed to read. You're supposed to read six.
Here I go. All right. Here's the short form. An AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. And six. Problems of money, the long form, problems of money, property, and authority may easily divert us from our primary spiritual aim. We think, therefore, that any considerable property of genuine use to AA should be separately incorporated and managed, thus dividing the material from the spiritual. An AA group as such should never go into business. Secondary aids to AA, such as clubs or hospitals, which require much property or administration, ought to be incorporated, so set apart that, if necessary, they can be freely discarded by the groups. Hence, such facilities ought not to use the AA name. Their management should be the sole responsibility of those people who financially support them. For clubs, AA managers are usually preferred. But hospitals, as well as other places of recuperation, ought to be well outside AA and medically supervised. While an AA group may cooperate with anyone, such cooperation ought never go so far as affiliation or endorsement, actual or implied. An AA group can bind itself to no one. That's a long form of a tradition. So I did a workshop, me and a few folks, we did a workshop a few years ago, and we did it at a church. The church invited us to do a workshop. They said, would you come do one of those 12-step workshops at our church? We have some church members, kids who are struggling with alcoholism and so forth and so on. We'd love for you guys to facilitate an AA workshop, and maybe we can get our children to come to this workshop. So we could probably do that. So we talked amongst each other. We discussed, you know, what literature we'd pass out, what we'd be doing, how long it would be. We went through all that deal. And when we got to the church to do it, what happened was, during the breaks or before or after the meeting, the folks at church would be trying to get the members saved, is what was going on. And that was just, for some of us, that's extremely scary. And that affiliation that happened there was wrong. And I think that I am 100% responsible for what the newcomer hears, what they see, and I'm not good at it. I'm not perfect at it by all means, but I do believe in that. So when that started to happen, it became a little bit weird, and people would say, hey, so-and-so start talking to me about whatever, and it made me feel uncomfortable, and it's, I don't want to come back here anymore. So we're doing this workshop, and the idea is to carry the message to maybe some folks who don't hear the message. Or I'm sober for a while. There's been some people, they want to take another trip through the steps again. They kind of want to look at it from a different angle. But every time they go to smoke a cigarette or when they go to the restroom, the folks at the church have affiliated with each other, that they feel that it's okay to do that. So we had to have some discussions with that, and it was very harmful to that to our workshop, to say the least. Also, whenever we have big money, property, and these different things, it diverts us. It diverts us from our primary purpose. So I'm supposed to be focusing on service and helping another alcoholic and my primary purpose. And I got this going on in the rest of my life. And if you add to me a whole bunch of money or some property to manage or some other thing like that, then what happens is, instead of me focusing on my primary purpose, I'm easily distracted by a lot of different things that's going on in the world. I'm easily distracted with what my daughter's doing, what the news is saying. I'm easily distracted with what's going on at work. I mean, those are tough enough to deal with. And I really believe that that's my alcoholism. When I'm focused on anything more than I'm focused on God and my program, then it's my alcoholism just drifting me away. And that's a tough enough. But when you add a whole other entity to that, a whole bunch of money, then it diverts me and I lose track. And Alcoholics Anonymous weakens if we do that. If we start focusing on all this money, or we buy a building or whatever we do, then our primary purpose is diverted. Our thought and our attention is diverted from what we're supposed to be. Val?
I don't think I could say it any better. That tradition is in place so we preserve our integrity. And, and in AA, and through sponsorship and being a member of a home group, and because of our elder members who hold, us youngsters accountable, I mean, that's how we start to learn integrity and, why this tradition is in place, so that we don't go buck wild chasing, our idealistic dreams. And, you know, it always has me as the savior, and it's going to be great. You're going to love it. And it's going to, you know, just, I can totally see how alcoholics in our beginning days were just flush with, we're going to just save the world. And because I know what happened to me when I woke up spiritually, I wanted to save the world. I wanted to carry the message. I wanted to do all this. I wanted to help everybody. I want, you know, and you start to learn how to do that in a more mature way. You start to learn how to do that with some integrity and understanding, just like Mike talked about, that we don't get diverted from our primary purpose. And there are things that could divert us from our primary purpose if we chose to get involved with them or affiliate with them. So we just don't do it. We have to stay together and stay on our primary spiritual aim. So we don't, you know, promote or endorse any kind of outside organization at all. Let's see, what are we on now? Do you have anything else?
I just think that we ought to be thoughtful. I'm sorry, be considerate. I'm not saying, you know, it's my opinion only, is that when it comes to literature, a lot of intergroups and meetings, we put out different literature. And I think that we ought to be thoughtful of this tradition when we get these different booklets and so forth and so on. And that, you know, if I'm responsible of carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous and having a primary purpose, then I think that we need to look at our literature and make sure that it's conference approved first. That's not to say that I don't take these things home personally, what's on my toilet or in my office that I read, that's, you know, that's my business. But I think at our meetings and our offices and so forth and so on, that we ought to be thoughtful of, you know, there's a line there somewhere, and I'm, you know, I'm not the authority by all means, but I think that applies absolutely. Thanks, Bob.
Yeah, my home group just has conference approved literature. We don't put other stuff out on the table for that very reason.
Yeah.
Are we doing seven now?
Time for seven.
All right. Long form first. Sorry. Seven, the AA groups themselves ought to be fully self-supported by the voluntary contributions of their own members. We think that each group should soon achieve this ideal, that any public solicitation of funds using the name of Alcoholics Anonymous is highly dangerous, whether by groups, clubs, hospitals, or other outside agencies. The acceptance of large gifts from any source or of contributions carrying any obligation whatever is unwise. Then, too, we view with much concern those AA treasuries which continue beyond prudent reserves to accumulate funds for no stated AA purpose. Experience has often warned us that nothing can so surely destroy our spiritual heritage as futile disputes over property, money, and authority. I tell you, recently, before the whole COVID thing, we were having a business meeting, and our treasurer was giving a report, and we were kind of stunned by the amount of money that was in our treasury. He had made all the he's new, so he's still learning all of his responsibilities as treasurer. And we were like, we got to get rid of that money, and we got to get rid of it fast, you know, because we don't hold on to that money beyond a prudent reserve or some stated AA purpose, like if the group is going to put on a workshop or if the group is going to do a anniversary dinner or whatever. It needs to have a purpose attached to it. My group too, we also set aside money every month for towards our church and helping, donating to the church to help them, because where we meet is a big carpeted space, and to help pay for the cleaning of that carpet. They've never asked us to do that. I mean, we pay our regular rent, but we want to be givers and takers, and like was said, not takers, like was said earlier, you know, we want to leave it better than we found it. We want to participate. We want to be a part of that, and we help, you know, we spill just as much coffee on that floor as church members do, so we want to participate in that way. But
I love, I think this applies to life as well. And again, I think this speaks to integrity and also when the basket is passed, you know, when I think about how we are with money, you know, there's another thing that happened in my home group. My home group provides babysitting. And because when the group was started, we had a lot of single moms, and they were struggling with taking their kids to meetings, and they wanted to be able to go to meetings without the kids being disruptive. So we started a meeting with babysitting, and then, you know, the regulations with the church changed. We had to carry insurance. We had to have babysitters that could be insured, and all of that stuff. So our cost went up in term where when we first started doing it, it was just members, and we were rotating that job within the home group. Then we had to get professional sitters and do the required insurance and stuff. And we felt that this service was really, really important. We had many women come to us and tell us, you know, I don't know if I would have been able to go to meetings if you guys didn't have this babysitting in place. And we felt it was a vital service to our AA community. When we had to start carrying, you know, insurance and professional sitters and so forth, I mean, the cost of that was huge. And the group had to make a decision around that. You know, are we going to continue to pay for this? And it's been discussed a couple times, because we would pass the basket, and sometimes we'd have enough to pay the sitters and meet our expenses, and other times we wouldn't. So we started talking about what can we do so we can ensure that we can still have these sitters, so people can come to hear the message of Alcoholics Anonymous and bring their kids if necessary. And there were times in our group where we cut out, you know, we would have cookies or snacks or whatever. We cut that out. We really streamlined some things and stopped doing some things that we were spending money on in order to continue to pay for those babysitters. And I know for myself, with people that I sponsored and other members, you know, we talked about we need to make sure we're setting a good example when the basket goes around, that we're giving what we can. Because not everybody who comes into AA can give. Whether they're new or not, people go through different things in sobriety. I mean, if you'd asked me to, you know, put $10 in the basket, you know, a year and a half ago, that would have been tough for me. If you asked me to put in a dollar or two, I could do that. But to put in 10 or 5 or whatever, it would have been a lot. So to give where we can and to help cover when people can't. And, you know, like Mike talked about, it's really important that we're spiritually fit with money, because it's so easy to get distracted. We do need to be self-supporting. And I'm going to pass it over to you.
Thanks, Val. I appreciate it. I think that we, in my experience as Alcoholics Anonymous, we are some good step workers. And we, you know, if you say there's so-and-so is 50 miles away and they need a ride to a meeting or whatever, we will all get together and we will all go and do that. What I found through different committees and different service structures that I've been a part of is that we, as collectively as a whole, and this is not everybody, this, you know, this applies to some don't, and also there's different circumstances and situations that people in, but I think statistically less than 50% of the groups donate to their central office, to their intergroup office, and these things. And when you ask the question, who does AA belong to? Who is responsible for Alcoholics Anonymous and what goes on there? The answer should be me. I am a small part of a great whole. Alcoholics Anonymous belongs to all of us, to us members. And with that responsibility comes a financial burden. We are all, when Bob at detox just got out of detox and he don't want to drink again and he's doing whatever, he's walking, maybe he's barefoot, and he goes to the phone and he calls the intergroup office or the central office and says, I need to get to a meeting. Can you hook me up? Who do you think, how did that phone bill get paid? Who's answering that phone? There's a lot of things going on in Alcoholics Anonymous that help carry the message that cost money. And for that, we are all responsible. I think that, so where does money and spirituality mix? They absolutely mix. And I've asked a few people, do they mix? And the answer has been no, but they 100% mix. And an example is that my financial security is in direct proportion to the amount I give. If I'm being tight with my money, then I'm being tight with my money. Then I start worrying about my money. I start getting very afraid about money and so forth and so on. But it's almost easily resolved by giving a little bit away or buying somebody something, something they may need. And I believe that we are all to be good stewards financially in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then there's a certain amount. We're not supposed to donate tons and tons of money. I think the General Services only allows you to donate $5,000 a year, and I think it's $10,000 in your will, and that's to keep a level playing field. So I think that level playing field is vital, because if somebody donated $50,000 to your central office, they're gonna have a sense of say so. What goes on at that office. Not only that, but whoever seen that person donate that $50,000, for whatever reason, money is just funny. And we're going to look to that person maybe a little bit more. They're going to get a little bit more power or, persuasion than they normally would. But I really believe that we are all responsible for what goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous financially, all of us. And I'll go buy a new boat, and I'll go buy a new motorcycle, and buy fishing lures, and you name it. But give an extra dollar in the basket, it never crosses my mind. Now, sure, there's been some tight times, by all means, but the dollar in the basket in 1935, it's 2020. It's different now, and things are more expensive, and we're able to reach out to alcoholics in different and new and incredible ways. And I think that we are all responsible for a group, from the group level and from an individual level. We are responsible for financially for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm going to go on to the next one, and we got about 20 more minutes, Val.
Okay.
8, short form. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. In the long form, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional. We define professionalism as the occupation of counseling alcoholics for fees or hire, but we may employ alcoholics where they are going to perform those services for which we may otherwise have to engage non-alcoholics. Such special services may be well recompensed, but our usual AA 12-step work is never to be paid for. And with that, I got a few experiences. I did a talk at a boys' institution. I was asked by another member, and the boys' institution tried to pay me. And I just was like, that's not what we do. And as a result of that, and they said, well, would you come back next week? And I said, yeah, I'll come back next week. And I went back and talked to the whole other half of the boys' institution. And as a result of doing it for fun and for free, the respect that they had for me as an individual and Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole was huge, because those couple of talks and a few people getting together was we were able to get Alcoholics Anonymous up and running in that institution on a weekly and regular basis. And without that, I'm not supposed to take money for 12-step work. Now, we have an intergroup office here in Akron, and we have a couple of intergroup workers that are paid. And these folks, in order to do what needs to be done at the intergroup office, you would be having to ask volunteers for 40-plus hours a week. And I don't know about you, but I volunteer to do stuff. I'm happy to do it. I really am. I'm happy to volunteer. But 40-plus hours a week, that gets old pretty quick without some kind of recompense. So it's vitally important that we pay, and we pay a good wage, and we take care of our workers and so forth and so on. But we have to employ workers in order that it's not that the workers are carrying the message. The workers are doing stuff for us so that we can come and ask them questions and get information, and that so that we can better carry the message. And I think it's important that we know that, because, it's somewhat controversial at times, but those workers are working so that we can carry the message better. I pass to Val.
Thanks, Mike. I don't think I could say it any better. I mean, that's my understanding and experience with the tradition too. We don't get paid for 12-step work. And that it's vitally important that, in our own intergroup here in Richmond, we have an individual who works at intergroup, and he's paid, and
Everybody votes on his salary and all that other stuff, and groups contribute to intergroups so that he can serve, you know, the AA groups in the greater Richmond area. And he provides, intergroup provides a vital service to help us carry out our 12-step work. And, you know, if you ever get mad at your central office or your intergroup, you can just withhold money. You know, it's the power of the purse strings, right? And I've seen that happen in AA too. So, but we are non-professional. We don't get paid for our 12-step work. We don't get paid for going to give talks. I, like Michael, I've been asked to go talk to a group of women once, and they wanted to pay me. And I said, well, I'll come and talk, but I can't come and talk as an AA member if you're going to pay me. And all I got, all of my experience, and I don't know how to give a talk without it being an AA talk. That is my experience. So I had to decline the invitation because of our tradition. It's just not worth it. And we're just, you know, I have watched a lot of people who work in the treatment industry too, and the people that are really successful in doing that keep it separated. And also people that work in corrections that are also members of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, the people that are successful in AA that work in those industries seem to keep it separate from their AA 12-step work. They don't let that become their 12-step work. So, and I had some great people to watch around that were just incredible members of AA that worked in those fields. So, okay, 9? Yeah? Do you have anything else?
No. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Tradition 9, AA as such, I'll never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. Wow, 9's a long one. Buckle up. Strap in. Each AA group needs the least possible organization. Rotating leadership is the best. The small group may elect its secretary, the large group its rotating committee. In the groups of a large metropolitan area, their central or intergroup committee, which often employs a full-time secretary, the trustees of the General Service Board are, in effect, our AA General Service Committee. They are the custodians of our AA tradition and the receivers of voluntary AA contributions by which we maintain our AA General Service Office in New York. They are authorized by the groups to handle our overall public relations, and they guarantee the integrity of our principal newspaper, the AA Grapevine. All such representatives are to be guided in the spirit of service, for true leaders in AA are but trusted and experienced services of the whole. They derive no real authority from their titles. They do not govern. Universal respect is the key to their usefulness. So for me, you know, what that means at my group level and at intergroup and at district, we can't impose or force obedience from our members. And we can't punish or expel people that aren't toeing the line the way that we think they should be toeing the line. We can make suggestions. And I think what's most important for me and within my home group is my own home group willing to follow the traditions to the best of their ability. Is that part of our group culture? Is that part of our group spirit, if you will, about how we want to operate? You know, one of the things that I looked at for myself individually, and there's some great information online about, you know, making the traditions personal to you and within your group. But do I exercise patience and humility in any AA job I take? And the answer is I have not always. Sometimes I've been a real princess and have not been graceful at all and have been resentful about it. And, you know, and it goes into my relationship as well. I just had an experience with my partner and I, where this is so true, where we, it's about the whole. It's about am I exercising patience and humility, even if I don't get my way? But we're not organized in the traditional sense, but we do create these service boards and committees to help serve the greater good, to help us serve the primary purpose of carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous in hopefully a thoughtful way. So I'll turn it over to you, Mike.
Okay. Thanks, Val. Just 10 more minutes. So I just want to highlight just one of the real quick out there. Rotating leadership is the best. And not rotating, I believe, breeds fear. And I have been had a service position for longer than I should. And a couple of things happened as a result of that. I felt powerful and I became a dictator. And although I might have been more qualified to be able to do whatever service position, I was simply just good at it. If we rotate, then the new person who comes in with the new fresh ideas, they are the best at it because these are spiritual principles. I was afraid of a lot of different things. Maybe they'll be better than me, or maybe, you know, it won't go well or whatever. But rotating leadership is the best. I'm going to pass with that and I'm going to go on to 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. And I just want to say real quick that the long form of Alcoholics Anonymous is vitally important. That's why we're reading it here today. No AA group or member should ever, in such a way as to implicate AA, express any opinion on outside controversial issues, particularly of those of politics, alcohol reform, or sectarian religion. The Alcoholics Anonymous groups oppose no one. Concerning such matters, they can express no views whatsoever. So, real quick, the times that we're in, 2020, has been filled with controversial kinds of stuff. Now, if I go onto my social media page and I find out that so-and-so that I looked up to so much, that helped me so much in AA, has completely different political views than me, then all of a sudden I'm like, what? What happened? I thought so highly of him. And the truth of the matter is I do think highly of them. But when these areas of politics and religion and reform that they're talking about in this tradition, when they come up, they separate us. They just do. They divert us from our unity. So it's important that I remember that this tradition, because we are judgmental people. We just are. I'm arrogant, selfish. And, you know, I've learned from these things over and over and from my mistakes. But these issues that they bring, especially politics, boy, it will bring apart, it will separate two people very quickly. So I'm in order to be able to navigate through that, I have a tradition, this tradition. I'm going to look past it. I don't even want to talk about politics with some people because it's a big distraction for me and it will divert me and divide me from you. I'm going to pass with that term, Val.
Yeah, that was perfect. I mean, as a, you know, my home group doesn't affiliate with any cause, no matter how noble it may be. How much our members may believe in something or whatever, it's immaterial. It has no place in what we're doing here and what our primary purpose is. So I'm going to jump on to 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. So the long form is, our relations with the general public should be characterized by personal anonymity. We think AA ought to avoid sensational advertising. Our names and pictures as AA members ought not to be broadcast, filmed, or publicly printed. Our public relations should be guided by the principle of attraction rather than promotion. There is never need to praise ourselves. We feel it better to let our friends recommend us. So for me, there's a lot in here, and especially, you know, with today, with social media and the ability to post anything in the public domain. Before the internet became, you know, a public media tool, how this was practiced in my home group was that if we were asked to go speak at a school, or whatever, that we would do that and just go by our first name only. We had really specific guidelines to guide us when we were going out into the public as members of Alcoholics Anonymous to make sure that we weren't breaking any anonymity. I can tell you a recent experience of mine with social media, a friend texted me and said, hey, one of your talks is on YouTube. And this was something that was recorded a long time ago. I had no way of knowing that this would get posted on the internet. And, you know, I say my full name when I gave that talk, with no idea that that talk would go beyond AA. And what was concerning to me was that I had talked about my father, who is also a member of AA. And he, you know, it talks about we don't want to inadvertently, I was breaking his anonymity, basically, if somebody was listening to that. So I found out who posted it, and I called them, and I asked them if they would take that down. Because, you know, I had talked about other people when I was given that workshop that were implicated. And it's just, it wasn't right. I'm not somebody who posts my anniversaries on my Facebook page. I belong to several private groups, and that's about as far as I can go with that. And as a group, my group, we stay true to this tradition. I'll pass it to you, Mike.
Thanks, Val. I 100% agree. I do believe that in Alcoholics Anonymous, I think that the principle of attraction rather than promotion is for outside of AA. And I think that we promote all the time. And I think it's okay for us to say, hey, my home group's having an anniversary. You know, we're promoting some stuff. You know what I mean? And I think that's okay. The promotion portion of this tradition is for outside. And it does say sensational. And now there's, have you seen AA billboards and the infomercials and stuff like that? And they're very conservative, if you will. And I think that's okay. And I think that people have been helped by that. But I don't want to take too much time and go into, but it's okay to promote in AA what we got going on. But when it comes to outside AA, we don't want to get in that mess. It's playing in the mud. And we really don't want to do that. So I'm going to go ahead and read. Is it my turn to read?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to read 12. Short form. Anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. In the long form. And finally, we of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the principle of anonymity has an immense spiritual significance. It reminds us that we are to place principles before personalities, that we are actually to practice a genuine humility. This to the end that our great blessings may never spoil us, that we shall forever live in thankful contemplation of him who presides over us all. And I can't tell you how many times that principles before personalities have saved me from saying something that I shouldn't say. It saved me from making decisions that I shouldn't make. And the anonymity feature of this tradition is vital too, because if I start or anyone starts being the face of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's a very slippery slope. Because if they perhaps were to get caught doing something whatever wrong, then the judgment would come and Alcoholics Anonymous would get labeled because of that individual. So the anonymity keeps me small. It's easy for me to get arrogant. It's easy for me to get a big head. It's easy for me to get prideful. And it's easy for me to puff up. And this principle keeps me on a level playing field with everybody else. I'm going to turn it over to Val.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, you're right. I think it's an individual decision if I want to reveal that I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous outside of an AA meeting. But it's certainly not okay for me to disclose your membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the idea of, sacrificing my personal ambition is our greatest spiritual principle, because I am such an ego-driven, love, money, property, power, prestige. I love it, but it's a slippery slope for someone like me. I would pay dearly and have going down those paths. But those are stories for another time. I think we're out of time, right?
Yeah, we are out of time. Thank you, Val.